Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Fails us with his exceptional reporting and his knowledge of 90s R&B. It's CBS Justice correspondent Scott McFarlane. Hi there, Scott.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for Erykah Badu, and thanks for both of you for welcoming me on.
Ooh, Erykah Badu. She's good. I didn't know this one, though. It's definitely a tune. Gets a kind of tap in your toes.
97. Bank on it.
Look at him. Always so impressive. Scott, you were here in the city back in May when Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan pleaded not guilty to federal obstruction charges. Now here we are. It is day three of testimony in this high-profile trial. Judge Dugan, of course, accused of helping a man who was in the country illegally evade immigration agents at the courthouse in April. We have heard from members of the arrest team, including FBI agents. We've heard from fellow judges. Do you think we'll hear from Dugan? Will she take the stand and explain her side?
Well, of course, she has the right not to. We all know that. Whether she does so or not can sometimes be a mid-trial strategy. You know, the defense can get a sense, Jess, of where things are going and whether they need to put somebody on the stand and expose them to unpredictable cross-examination, which can be problematic for any number of reasons. This trial is going a bit longer than I think some people might have expected when they first saw this case surface in May. Such a point-blank case, such a simple allegation here, but they've really tried to support it with a lot of witnesses, and that doesn't mean the jury is being more convinced. Just because you throw a lot of witnesses at something doesn't mean you're making a more compelling case. You'll remember, though, the initial trial date on this case was for mid-July. Now, federal cases don't move that fast, but having this in December is earlier than some of us thought as well, that there might be more pretrial arguments and motions. They've got this thing right there in the hands of a jury now with the fate of a local judge in their hands.
Is it reasonable to ask if the impending holiday has anything to do on how quickly either side may be wanting to move through? I know you have to obviously approach all angles of a case and you have this lengthy list of witnesses that are going to be called, but is that timeline affected by all, at all by where in December this trial is happening?
Generally speaking, yes. The holidays are almost like a dead end for juries across America, in cases big and small, federal and local. It doesn't give anybody an advantage, but yeah, jurors are humans, and this is not exactly a quiet time of year for most of us. We're pretty darn busy right now, weekends, weekdays, nights, and jurors have lives, and jurors, if they see a declarative way to go in the jury room, may, when they get this case, see the holiday deadline as an urgency to come out with an answer, but you can't predict juries. You can't know what they're going to do, which is always the risk of a trial. It's always the leverage the federal government wields to try to get plea agreements. But this case was never going to be pleaded out. There's a fundamental issue here, a fundamental issue about separation of powers, about the executive branch reaching into the judicial branch, according to Judge Dugan's team. And I don't think this case was ever going to be stopped short of a trial.
We did get a little update just before noon on the timeline here. The prosecution says they plan to ramp up their case this afternoon. We'll see how quickly it moves after that. Scott, what happens if Judge Dugan is convicted? And then on the flip side, if she's acquitted?
Well, I think you could bet the farm on an appeal. I mean, that's pretty much the muscle memory of federal criminal defense, is look for issues with the jury instructions, look for issues in the trial to compose an appeal. You could guarantee that. If she is convicted, also, it's worth noting this is not a violent crime. This is not a crime of violence. This is not somebody who has a criminal history. It seemed preposterous to think about prison sentences in the sentencing memorandum. Well, that's kind of premature because this case hasn't gone to the defense yet, nor has it gone to a jury. But we are talking about a federal felony, which is not an insignificant thing.
Scott, it's interesting as I've watched how media coverage of this trial in particular has unfolded. Obviously, here in Milwaukee, it's leading most newscasts. You have every outlet, including ourselves, with a body at the federal courthouse. And I know that this case has drawn attention across the country, but it doesn't seem like we're getting those outside the courthouse updates from some of the major network outlets. I know that once we get towards verdict day, that may change. But is that a little surprising in your eyes that we're not seeing at least maybe an uptick in coverage nationally, considering how much this could have implications for?
It doesn't surprise me, Adam, not because the case is anything short of significant, and if not historic, a transcendent case across America with a judge being prosecuted by the federal government for what she did in her courtroom. But it's the federal court system, and the hurdle for the federal court system has always been and remains to this day the prohibition on cameras and audio. You cannot hear what happens in this historic trial. You certainly can't see what happens in this historic trial. The federal government, by having a nationwide ban on cameras and audio access in their courtrooms at their trials, has made it difficult for a national audience to pay attention to any singular case. You know, before it was dropped, you know, President Trump's criminal case in Washington for election subversion was going to be invisible to the public, even though he was, at the time, a former president and private citizen. Even if that case persisted and continued, you wouldn't have heard it. You wouldn't have seen it. That impacts the public's attention, and I think you're seeing that with Judge Dugan. A clearly important case that will devour the nation's attention again at verdict is happening invisibly, which is why you have to have that body at the courthouse to tell you what's going on.
Can you take us into that morning meeting or that major meeting where they, for even if it's just 2 minutes, say, okay, this is coming up in Milwaukee. What are we going to do?
Yeah. And by the way, those meetings, you remember those meetings when you were in television news. They go for about an hour. I mean, you got to pace yourself in television editorial meetings and bring two cups of coffee. I think this is indistinguishable from its geography. It doesn't matter where in America this particular thing happened. You had a local judge arrested, handcuffed, perp walked, and photographed by the FBI, posted by the FBI director. It's a big deal. And it's also happening in a political epicenter. Wisconsin's always the center of politics. It's always the center of national eyes on how things are playing politically. And it's going to be interesting to see how all those pivotal voters next November in Wisconsin view anything, especially something like this.
Any chance you were flying back to Milwaukee for the verdict? You were here earlier.
If I could have my way, I'd be there right now. Covering the Trump administration is a high velocity, high octane practice, and we all stay like firemen on the fire pole, ready to slide down whenever there's breaking news. I would just say that May in Milwaukee is a very special time of year. I think perhaps people who don't live in our area don't see the charm in December the way they need to, the way they should, the way it's justified. It's just not the same people.
Okay, fair enough. Another big thing today in news, former special counsel Jack Smith is on Capitol Hill today for a closed-door interview with the House Judiciary Committee. He's discussing his pair of criminal investigations into President Trump. I know that you have seen parts of his statement. What is Smith's message?
Well, Smee's testifying behind closed doors, so no audio, no video of that either. I'm getting about tired of telling you about things we can't see and hear that are really important. But this is important. Jack Smith, of course, investigated Trump for election subversion and for the alleged classified records mishandling. He did both of those cases, both of which were dismissed, one by a judge, one by Smith himself. When Trump won re-election, you can't prosecute a sitting president. Argument he's making here is it was a righteous prosecution, that he was confident he was going to get a conviction, that the president's alleged crimes are why he took the case, not out of any political animus, and defending his techniques, tactics, and the way he brought this through the court system before dismissal. When you have a multi-hour interview with a congressional panel behind closed doors, there's a transcript that is created. I suspect that transcript will be released in a matter of days or weeks, but you also can be confident both sides behind closed doors politically are going to take excerpts of that transcript and highlight it for their own political ends. You cannot take the politics out of what Jack Smith did, even though Jack Smith is insistent what he was doing was not in itself political.
I know Trump told reporters in Washington today he supports the idea of an open hearing on this. Quote, I'd rather see him testify publicly. Is there any chance that that would ever actually happen?
There is a chance, but Jack Smith's the one who wants to be public, too. He said he wanted everything to be public so that he couldn't be clipped unfairly or taken out of context, which a lot of witnesses do prefer. It didn't go that way. The majority in the U.S. House, the Republican leaders on the committee, wanted to do this behind closed doors, making an argument that that's more the custom of how they do initial congressional investigations. I wouldn't rule out this happening publicly eventually if the majority party sees it worthwhile, which means If Republicans see that they have to do something to get Jack Smith in front of cameras, they'll do it this year or next. If Democrats win back the House next year, they could do it in 2027 and make this a public spectacle.
Expectations tonight for President Trump's live address to the nation?
Brief, efficient, as will the coverage, because this is happening in primetime television. For our purposes at CBS News, the night of the Survivor finale. So we'll carry the president's address. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of post-game analysis on network television, because the Survivor program is wildly popular across America and people do want to get back to it. I don't think it's going to be a long, unscripted affair, which so many Trump speeches are.
I was going to say, can the president be brief?
We're going to find out. as the song said when you brought me in, things can go on and on and on and on, and this could be one of them. See how I went full circle there for you, Adam?
I love that.
Very perceptive.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll find out tonight. That's CBS's Justice Correspondent, Scott McFarland. We always appreciate it. Scott, talk soon.
Thank you both.
It is 12:50.